Hi guys. Oh my god, guys, it's 3 minutes to 12 midnight today, February 10th, 2021. I'm taking the timestamp. Hi guys, welcome back to another episode of the Non-Immigrant Student Podcast, where if I can do it, you can do it too. Of course, I know it sounds like it's such a lame mantra, but yeah, that's what it is. If you have anything better, let me know. But the whole point is, I don't want you to feel like, she's a different kind of person. She's a breed. Of course I'm not. Of course, although I can argue and say, I think I'm special. And I hope you think the same about yourself, you know? Like, I hope you also think you're special. And that there's nothing normal. There's nothing ordinary about you, you know? Yeah, so, guys, it's 2 minutes to 12 midnight. In just 2 minutes, you'll find out why I'm counting down. But I'm so excited. Okay. In the last episode, I also talked about how I'm not so dramatic. But, well, you'll be the judge of that eventually. So, I hope you listened to the first episode where I introduced myself, where I also talk about, you know, why I started the podcast. I hope you also listen because you'll find out why a lot of things are going to be the way they are. I'm so happy to have you here. Thank you so much for stopping by on this podcast. Why am I clapping? I have a personal rule. I'm not going to edit this podcast. And now that I'm just here waiting for it to be 12 midnight, I'm also thinking about cases I have to read before tomorrow morning. But yeah, we'll be fine. Today's episode is titled How I Got Into Cornell. Yes, how I got into Cornell University. It's a very funny story. Okay, no, it's not actually funny. It's a very crazy faith-filled story that I'm happy to share with you in just about a minute. Let's give it 1 minute, guys. 1 minute. I wish I could see the second timer so I could count down. I just hope I don't delete this episode. But I'm so excited, guys. So, like I was saying in the former episode, that I'm not sure I really described myself to you in the meet your host part of the episode, but I believe that as this journey goes on, you would get to know me more than I know myself, even if you're listening to— yes, it's 12 midnight. Yeah, guys. Oh my god, I hope my neighbors don't come to knock on my door, guys. It's 12 midnight. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you so much, God. You are faithful. You are good. Yes. So it's 12 midnight. It is exactly 1 year since I received my admission into Cornell University. If this was YouTube, I would insert, you know, like an audience clapping. Yay! Oh gosh, I'm so extra and dramatic. But I'm trying so hard. I won't cry. Of course I won't. I'm a big girl. Duh. I won't cry. I promise you, I'm not going to cry. Oh my god, Tolu. Okay, let's be serious. So, because I am a woman of sentiments, you can see that I waited till this time to record this episode. In fact, this was supposed to be my third recording, but I was like, no, I must be on mic. I must be plugged by the time it's 12 midnight to celebrate this special moment. In fact, right now, if I wasn't recording, I'll probably be kneeling right now just thanking God again for this super great opportunity and privilege to be at Cornell University. So because this podcast is just going to be 30 minutes about thereabout, I will jump right into it. I'm so happy that it's been a year. I haven't spent a year at Cornell University yet. No. It's just been a year since I got my admission letter. And for anyone who's applying currently or who has gone through this process or who has ever been admitted into any university before, you know what this feels like. I still remember where I was. And I'm not joking. And I don't want you to laugh. Well, it's not that funny, but yeah. So in my house, I come from a family of 5 girls, of which I am the first, proudly. Shout out to all my beautiful sisters, Tammy, Titi, Tony, and Tammy. Shout out to you girls. So yes, I had applied to Cornell in 2019. Yeah, 2019. And of course, maybe I'm a pseudo perfectionist, you know, because I'm really taking this thing too far, you know, trying to overdo you know, I submitted my Cornell application. You won't believe it. So the deadline was January 5th, 2020. I think I submitted at 11:50 something. Even my Stanford application that I submitted in October, I submitted it at 11:57. The deadline was 12 p.m. Pacific time. So I'm clapping like this because I can't. I'm like, Tolu, you should know better. But that's the kind of human being you guys are becoming friends with, fortunately and unfortunately. So yes, of course, I also pulled that late nighter on my Cornell application. But you know, who cares now? Who cares? I'm here now. Look at me. You know, so it's been a very long road and journey. And that's why I said I was going to wait till 12 midnight to record this episode, to be in the moment. And that's also one of the reasons why I waited till this day to go live on this episode, you know, to go live with my podcast. I was like, you know, although there are other reasons, but like the major reason, the other underlying reason, but the major reason is because I wanted it to be special for me and for you. So I'm a recovering selfish person, but you know, as I grow older and as I also hopefully mature in Christ, I'm learning to love others and also receive love. So I'm also trying not to do this just for myself, but for you, of course, as well, because you're here for all this content to also help, you know, to garner tips to help you in your journey. And yeah, which is part of the reasons why I started this podcast. You know what? You should listen to the first episode. So now I'm rambling because I'm so happy. But yeah, it's been a year since I got my admission at Cornell University. So I had just finished. So I said, why I was mentioning that I'm a first child, you know, and a dad in my house and whatever. I had just finished washing plates. I think it was my turn in the kitchen. So my mom has sworn that she wouldn't get any more housemaids or house helps, which is what we would call for other people who might not be Nigerians or Africans. So we usually have like. I shouldn't say the word servants, but I can't think of any euphemism right now to use and describe it. Like what you guys would call nanny in the Western part of the world, or a help, or a cleaner, you know, or I don't know, you know. So we used to have those growing up because my mom was a working woman. She was my both parents, so we just always had helps around the house. And when we were much older, she said no, she wasn't going to take any more. So me and my sisters had to come up with timetable and roster to do stuff at home because everybody would argue about it. So on your day, it is your cooking day. During the weekend, we shared who washed the bathrooms, who cleaned up the house downstairs, upstairs, you know, and all of those shenanigans. But that night, I remember I had kitchen duty. And of course, I was in short, I didn't think Cornell. Okay, no, actually, I knew they were going to respond to me in 2 weeks because I had done an interview on the 27th of January in 2020. And they were like, they'll get back to me in two weeks. So obviously, I was already calculating. So that's like 4 days left in January and 10 more days in February. So it makes sense that that was exactly 2 weeks. That's 14 days, you know. So there was anticipation, but it's just that you didn't know which day it would come. So I had finished. In short, I think I knew that was the day because for some reason I checked my email. Oh no, I actually always check my email. I love to check my emails, you know. So I would argue that my email, my Gmail app is one of my favorite social media apps, if mails qualify for social media. But yes, so I had finished kitchen duty. I came upstairs, you know, I was about to lie down and I checked my email and I saw it. But well, newsflash, I didn't scream because it's like, no, 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 no. Did I actually get in? Oh my God, did I actually get in? Did I? No, 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 no. You're kidding me. Oh my God. You know, and you know, all that. So I didn't know if I should run downstairs and tell my parents. You know, I'm a big girl now. It's not like it's college or anything. I did not shall run anywhere and tell anybody. So I think I went to the next room and I told my sister. I don't think all of us were present. So I had a sister doing her master's in the UK at the time. And so I don't think all of us were present, but I think I told my baby sister, who was just 7 years old or 6 years old at the time, Tammy, I got into Cornell. She probably didn't understand what I was saying, but you know, there was no one to really share that joy with. And then I messaged my ex at the time. I messaged my friends, you know, I was like, oh my God, I got into Cornell, you know, and all of that. I messaged some of my other friends. I also messaged my friend, Adesua, who was the first person who told me about the school and how I should apply there, you know. So I told a couple of few, I took a screenshot and forwarded it to a couple of people on my WhatsApp. And that's how I remember my Cornell admission story. And it's still so very special to me. And, you know, forever and ever and ever and ever, February 10th, 2020 would be a special date to me. Although I hoped to start this podcast on the 23rd of November last year, I remember that clearly also because 23rd became a special date in my life. That was the day I think I got an email that was going to, I was invited for an visa interview. So, but I will eventually give you all these gist, guys. Don't worry. I'm a storyteller. I'm here for you. In the last episode, I talked about how I'm a writer. I want to say I used to be a writer, but I believe if you still give me a writing gig, I would do my best, you know, and it won't be a shabby work. So I am a writer, but maybe, I guess I tell better stories vocally. I don't know. We'll find out. So if you want to, if you help me compare, you can. I have a Medium account. I think it's Tools or Tolulopo.com. I know I have a Medium account somewhere. You can go there and look for the articles, you know, and be a judge of if I'm a better speaker or writer. But yeah. I remember sending the screenshot to some of my friends, and then I eventually told my parents. And, you know, I didn't expect my parents to really get the hype, although they just know their first daughter is going for master's. And actually, I wasn't really keen on going for my master's prior to 2020. I really thought, I still talk about how I was working as an operations engineering intern at Oriental Energy Services on the enter. See me, Oriental Energy Resources Limited. That it should be somewhere on my LinkedIn, you know. I was working for them, which is a marginal oil and gas field, you know, where we produce like 20,000 barrels of oil a day, which was small compared to where I was coming from. I'd entered a Total, what's the full name? We call it Totalfina Elf. We used to call it Totalfina Elf or Total NG, but Total, like the big Total, big four oil and gas company. I interned there as well in the process engineering unit, you know, and they would produce as much as like 250K barrels per day. So I was really keen. I had tasted some of this oil and gas money, and people who have been oil and gas business, oil and gas produce, you know, oil and gas extraction and production business, you know that oil money is blood money. That's a Nigerian joke, please, but I would explain it. So because, okay, should I explain? This is not necessary, but let me lay the whole groundwork. So when we say all money is blood money, for those of you who might not be Nigerians, so it's a thing in Africa. Oh, no, let me not drag other countries, please. It's a thing in Nigeria, ritual, you know, blood rituals. They kill people for money here, and I'm serious. It's not a joke. Neither am I being superstitious. There's the belief that, you know, if you kill someone or... I don't want to go into it. It's a lot of dirty, bloody stuff. But yes, they kill people for money. And people in the Nollywood movies, like in the Nigerian movie industry, they would show you how when you kill somebody, you become richer, you have more money, even if it's money given to you by the devil, you know, that never finishes and always asks for something in return. But yes, so and sometimes most people who were not born rich, they were not old money, but they just had new money. It's like... Where did they get that money from? It must have been blood money, you know, and it's always a lot at one time. So that's what we refer to oil money, because it's like you just, once they employ you, if they employed you as at 2017, 2018, 2019, you would go in earning like 700,000 naira a month. You know, you begin to grow through the ranks, 1.2 a month, 1.3, 1.4, like that, 1.8, 2.2. So it was a lot of money. Oh, and yes, workers are like the highest paid people in Nigeria back then. So, you know, I really thought I was on track to becoming this leading the oil and gas industry with a lot of money, but driving my white Benz, you know. I had this supervisor too that had a white Benz, so I, you know, she was like a role model that I would have my own white Benz someday, you know, sooner than I expected. But yeah, yada yada yada. So I didn't think my parents really knew what was going on with me and my master's, because it was like, I thought you didn't want to get a master's. I thought you were working in this oil and gas company you were happy with. But eventually I said get a master's. And I also, shout out to Master's Prep. I also really leaned on their, you know, the community that Master's Prep was. So we're just a group of like Covenant University graduates, you know, who were together, you know, trying to study abroad, who decided, oh, we're going to go abroad. We're going to fulfill our American dream, Canadian dream, Australian dream, German dream, European dream, you know, West. And now it's such a growing community now. So yes, I also informed them that I had gotten my admission into Cornell. But there's a backstory. So I have a friend at UT Austin who I also did an interview with, and you probably find out about her on this podcast. She so when I had put it on my girl squad group chat, she sent a screenshot saying, Tolu, do you know that Cornell is an Ivy League? I was like, what do you mean? She was like, Cornell, you know how most of us Well, let me speak for myself. I'm always dragging Nigeria. I'm always giving all my excuses on Nigeria. Apparently some people in Nigeria knew Cornell. League. Cornell University was an Ivy League. So that's a fun fact, actually, about my admission. I did not know Cornell University was an Ivy League. To be honest, I applied here because my friend suggested to apply here. And it's not like you go online to Google, is my school an Ivy League? No. I just knew it was a really good school, you know? I just felt I was applying to a really good school, you know, like I was applying to Cornell, of course I have. And I applied to schools that looked like they were top in Iran. I think even when I checked, maybe Cornell was like number 9 or so. And, you know, there are also a lot of schools that there are Japanese schools, Chinese schools that are among first 10. So to me, it was like not a big, I mean, Harvard is the only big deal. MIT is the only big deal. Stanford is the only big deal. To me, those were the 3 biggest schools I could possibly get into. And I chose one. I chose to go to Stanford. And so Stanford University was actually my dream school. Honestly, like, so when I didn't get into Stanford, it hit me. Of course, it hurts that, oh, I didn't get in. Even though I knew it was a reach. But I felt like, even though my GRE score wasn't that perfect, you know, but I had, like, other pedigrees. I had other, why is my English failing me? I had other qualifications. I would say, oh, maybe this is why they would take me. Because everything was going very smooth, you know. I got the waiver. I didn't have to pay the $125 application fee to go to Stanford. I didn't have to write the TOEFL exam. I got an exemption because I attended Cornell University. That is an institution where I was taught in English, you know, and I graduated with an English speaking degree or whatever. What else? You know, so there were a lot of things. I was even friends with the program director in Stanford. Like, I was sending an email, you know, and I didn't have to be so professional anymore. It was a cordial relationship. So I really thought all the lines were falling perfectly for me. I also applied to the my Tennessee application, and it felt like I had everything they needed, you know, the leadership qualifications, the right kind of, you know, just the right kind of essays, you know, I had every single thing I needed to put down. The boxes were filled. So I really thought I was going to get into Stanford by some miracle, you know, and I also trusted God to do that for me. But unfortunately, I got the email. I still remember, if I won't tell you, if I should even just gist you about that Stanford story, you still be telling me sorry. If you that night, I even told my family. You know, like when you have crazy faith, not everybody can relate. In the first episode, I also talk about how my Christian journey has been a journey of faith. Like, that is all in short, let's not, like I said in the first episode, if the Bible was to be written, I would be the next Abraham, you know, in the second edition of the Bible, which probably never happened. But yeah, so that night I told my family that it was 15th of January 2020. I told my family that the night Tennessee application is coming out, that maybe we should make jollof rice this evening. And in my house, in some people's houses, apparently jollof rice, which is like a very common Nigerian dish that I've seen at every party, it's like party food. You only eat it like on Sundays or on somebody's birthday in the house, you know. So for me to decide to cook jollof rice on a Wednesday, I believe it was a Wednesday, either a Tuesday, Wednesday or Thursday night, confirm, you see, I'm not lying, it's one of those days. And then I was going to make jollof rice that night.
If I had gotten the admission or not, but I just already promised my family that I was going to make jollof rice that night. And I'm sure we had chicken and plantain. So it's a ritual in my house, so it's like rice with fried plantain and, you know, a protein. So whatever. So and there was wine at home. Haters would say it's grapefruit, a big grapefruit juice. But yes, there was sharp wine at home. And it was, you know, I was saying I was going to throw a party because I was so sure I was going to get my Stanford admission. Lo and behold, thank God I did not do all those YouTube reveal videos, you know, when you open your college application in front of a camera. As I went upstairs, I sat down, I logged in. I still remember my username and password and the way the website looks, you know. Stanford has this very dull red and Cornell has this very bright red. Yes, I'm hating on them. And then, yeah, I checked it and they said, unfortunately. No, they didn't say unfortunately. You know, they always start very nicely. Blah, 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 blah. Sure, the way I even saw it, I already knew that. Wow. They rejected me, you know? And this isn't even the Stanford admission. I'm sure, first of all, actually, this is not Stanford rejecting me, actually. It was Knight Hennessy, actually. Because if you get the scholarship, then you get the admission. So that was it. The rejection came sometime later in March, actually. Yes, now I remember it clearly. It was the Knight Hennessy admission that came in, decision that came in first. Stanford came much later after I'd gotten Cornell. So, oh well, cut the long story short. Of course, I was sad. I don't know if I cried or not. Even my father said some very awful things to me because of it, but you know, the only good thing of that night is I ate jollof rice and it was pretty good, you know. I still remember. So, oh well, yeah, that's the story. So yeah, so after I saw that, I hated this, and I felt like that was the only way I could come to school abroad, because it was such a very lofty and generous, you know, very largest, you know, scholarship that they were going to give. It was going to be a full ride, and they still paid you. So I was, to me, that was like the El Dorado of school admission. That was, it felt like that was the only school that could take me, because it was like a dream come true financially. You know, like they would cover all your expenses and all that. Little did I know that I had other opportunities that I could apply. You know, I had other opportunities that were waiting for me ahead. So I applied to Cornell, I applied to Northwestern, although I never submitted it eventually. I applied to Columbia, I applied to Purdue University, and I applied to George Washington University. That's about six schools now, right? Yeah. Okay, I don't think I applied to Duke eventually, but it was on my list. These are schools I also started the application for. So for as many of them as I got free application waivers, I applied for. So this podcast isn't exactly to help you start this journey from scratch. You know, I didn't necessarily set out to help other people learn how to come here. Instead, I want that when you come here, you learn how, from my journey, you learn how to maximize your own journey and experiences. I'm not saying you don't know how to do it without me, but I'm just sharing my stories. And hopefully, if you don't, you learn from them. You know, that's all I'm trying to say. But in doing this as well, for as many requests as I receive on, how do I get this? Oh, how do I write an SOP? Oh, how do I do this? If I have to bring in an expert to talk about it so I can interview them, I will do that. But where I can give my own tips and tricks, of course, I would also do the same. But so yeah, so that was it. So those were the schools I applied to. And I think Cornell was the first to get back to me. So of course it was like, screw y'all other schools, man. It was like, you know, so after I got into Cornell, in fact, Columbia was even pursuing me that when they were disturbing me that sending your TOEFL result, and I already sent it in, they were still saying it wasn't verified or so. I think I had to take a Duolingo English test that was really stressing me out. I remember I still had to pay $100 and something for that one. How much did I pay? Okay, no, I don't think it was. I think it was cheaper. I think in Naira was about 17,000. You know, let me not confuse the prices now, because some things were really expensive at that time. So I still had to pay Duolingo test for these Colombian people. After I got my Colombian admission, any school that was disturbing me for too much information, I did not answer them. Even Northwestern, that's why I didn't complete the application anymore. In fact, I remember getting to Cornell and not still having some funding. So I thought, let me just complete this, my Northwestern, in case they give me funding, because it looks like I might not be able to make it to Cornell. So after my friend told me how, you know, like Cornell was an Ivy League university, so I eventually checked it out. I even found out that Brown University is an Ivy League school, you know, Dartmouth, UPenn. So I found out about all these other colleges that are apparently Ivy League. The Ivy Leagues are not just... In fact, Stanford is not an Ivy League. Funny enough, if you check, according to Google, I think the Ivy League schools, I think they are 8 or 7, you know. I think it's, let's try to count it. Harvard, Dartmouth, University of Pennsylvania, Princeton, Yale, Harvard. Have I mentioned Harvard? Cornell. I think it's 7 or 8. And Brown University. Yeah. So these universities are Ivy League. I stand to be corrected. You know, like, I'm not so sure. I'm not reading it off a book. So she told me, I was like, wow, cool. You know, but there was still some pain. There was still not this full excitement, because it wasn't Stanford. I hadn't yet heard back from my dream school. I don't think somehow in the haze of all this, I was still expecting that Stanford would still take me even without a scholarship, just for me to get to, you know, feel fulfilled. I really reached during my, you know, I was trying to reach for higher, you know, with my college admissions, my grad school admissions. But anyway, I got into Cornell. And when I got in, you know, at first, of course, I was grateful. I was grateful to God. I was grateful to my parents. I mean, I wrote my GRE twice. I'm sure I'll still have to say the story of of the whole journey, you know, or maybe we would have to break the housekeeping rule and make this just a little bit longer than 30 minutes, you know, but getting to this point was so hard that now I can't even remember it anymore, because of how much fun I'm having been on campus, you know, being now I'm a Konenian. Even though when I was coming to this school, I watched every possible YouTube video that existed. Plus, the lockdown helped me, you know, unravel all the secrets and mysteries of Cornell. I even found out the 165 fun things to do while in Cornell. So there's this published infamous list here of things you're supposed to do, you know, pre-COVID, visit this place, have lunch at a professor's house, make out in this place, do this at this place, you know. So I was ready. I even printed that. I was like, these are things I'm going to do. I'm going to post it in my college dorm or in my apartment, you know, wherever I stay. I had so many big dreams for coming here eventually. But it is such a good thing that I'm here. And I hope you feel the same way too for whatever universities you eventually choose. You know, for as many of you that went to university you went to, I'm sure for you even if it wasn't your dream school, but at least the school you ended up going to, I hope you're making the best out of it, you know. And that's what it is like for me with Cornell. I know it might be hard for you to believe because everyone is like, oh, Cornell, you know, it's like Cornell. You shouldn't feel like you settled for Cornell. Mr. Cornell settled for you. But yeah. Oh my God, that sounds so sloppy. But yeah, so, you know, but trust me, I had no inferiority complex whatsoever, you know. So I wasn't even thinking, oh, maybe Cornell won't pick me, because all my mind was on Stanford for some reason. Now that I think back, I'm like, why was I so stuck on it that I couldn't even see what was going on in other schools, you know? But every application I submitted, I put in my best. I think even with my Stanford, because it was my first application, maybe I even put in like 98%, and for every other one after that, I probably put in 100, 110, 115, you know, percent, just to get it straight, you know, being the woman, kind of woman that I am. So, but I'm really grateful. And just thinking about, you know, just deciding to record this episode today, 10th of February, 2021, it means so much to me. And I hope that you also think it's special, you know, that I'm releasing this today. So because I have a bit of some technicalities with some of the directories that my podcast is listed to, you might not be able to see this episode on your favorite, you know, directory yet. But if you do, then that's perfect. If not, you can listen to it off, you know, your website, off like a laptop screen or something without having the apps, but eventually it'll get to you. And if you're listening to this by the time it's already on the app, welcome. Even if you're not a first timer here, what am I saying, you're probably a first timer here, welcome. Thank you for joining me even if you're listening to this after February 10th, that's what I mean. Like, welcome still, you know. And for those of you who listen to it today, I'm really grateful for you, you know. I want you to feel special. Today is a special day for me too. I'm even trying to think of what to wear to class today because it's 12 midnight. It's currently like about 1 a.m. I'm still thinking, oh, what should I wear to class? I should take nice pictures today. Or what do I have that's red in my wardrobe, you know? Or maybe I should wear a dress because I hardly wear dresses. I'm always wearing like trousers or skirt, you know. Maybe we can blame that on being an engineering student or whatever. I don't know. Or come at university because we're always meant to. Dresses are for Sundays, you know. But tomorrow I'm thinking of wearing a dress and I'm like, Tolu, what is the big deal? But it still remains a big deal, guys. Especially how I got into Cornell. So for most of you that know, applying to the US is almost a rat race. I'm not even joking. Like, and this is not to discourage anybody who plans to come study in the US. If you actually have an American dream to fulfill, please be my guest. I'm not saying like, I really do not have anything against any other country, going to school in any other country, because I was a UK advocate once. I really thought I was going to end up doing my master's in the UK, actually. But after I had a conversation with somebody, I remember it was a conversation I had with people who are now immigrants in the US, actually, that really inspired me to look into US. But I realized that I had always been... America was really like El Dorado to me, actually, you know, in a lot of ways. I grew up on American movies. I knew so many random things about the US that, you know, how come I never thought, you know, of coming here eventually to be a student, you know? So, but, you know, as God will have it, I eventually changed course. And if you even check, so when we were in our last year of university, my immediate younger sister was in her penultimate year. My dad had asked us to write out a 3-year plan and a 5-year plan. So from 20, I think we wrote this in 2017. thereabouts. Yeah. So in 2017, he asked, and we're supposed to graduate in 2018 to write a 3-year plan. So I think, so that means the plan spanned from then till about 2022. When it got to where, and if I'm being honest, I think somewhere in 2021, I put there that I would get married on my 20th. Oh my God. I should look at it again. But I remember that sometimes I look at it from time to time and see how many things have ticked off so far, you know, consciously and unconsciously. But I still remember that where I put, I was going to go for masters. I think I put, no, I won't probably go, or if I go, I'll do it in UK, Norway, or Australia, you know, or some funny, I put in the countries where, like Norway, I knew it was free, tuition was free there, or so I heard, you know. US wasn't even on my bucket list. I didn't even know anything about school in the US. It was just, I still enjoyed watching my high school movies, my college movies. That was enough. That was enough for me to experience US, you know, vicariously. I was like, oh, that is enough for me to learn about this country that I love so much. But eventually, and now I'm here, so, and I'm trying to make the most of it. So after I found out all the things I was supposed to do to get into the US, I had a call with my friend Okam, and I told him, Okam, I'm about to start this journey of masters. Because he also had applied to the US, but eventually schooled in the UK. But you know, for every new process I start, and I'm sure you also can relate to this, you know, you have to ask around. I don't depend. See, Google is not my best friend. I'm sorry to say this. Oh, actually, I'm not sorry. But like, Google is not my best friend. Please don't tell me Google is your best friend. That's a lie. It's not my best friend. Like, even if he has all the information, he doesn't have the experiences. Or even if people leave their experiences, it's still not the same. For someone who writes and talks, I know that doing these things are not the same way. If I was supposed to write this experience, I would have to use fewer words. I would have to use, you know, more. I would have to use more euphemisms, you know. I would have to make it look good. But if I'm talking to you and, you know, having a proper conversation, of course I'll be able to give you more details. So eventually I found out all I needed to find out about applying to the US, my service fee, my GRE, my TOEFL exam, you know, and he gave me all these details. I still remember where I was. If you're Nigerian, you know what we call the NYS, the National Youth Service Corps. My CDS days were Fridays. CDS means Community Development Service Days. So there's a thing where you serve your country for 1 year, although it has lost the verisimilitude of what it was, you know, created to be, but we're supposed to serve our country for that 1 year in a different state from where we were born or our state of origin, you know. We're supposed to serve our country and, you know, also do good, give back in the societies where we're posted to. So whatever, I was shy in Lagos, earning my oil and gas money, my oil and gas school money, you know. But, you know, Chicken Republic was still a thing for us. Shout out to Chicken Republic, wherever they are, for giving us that refuel meal. So, like, we're able to get a meal for a dollar. Practically a dollar. 500 naira. That's like a dollar or even less, you know. So, like, a pack of rice and chicken was $1. 500 naira. And although now I think it was 800 naira if you wanted a drink, you know. So, we're dogged customers there. I was a customer at the VI branch. I just say at Deogun, if I remember clearly, the one just beside Buka Hot. Yeah, right? I think so. Yes, just that one, you know. And I had a call there with Okam. I had my paper and my biro. I still remember. I think I had seen my friend that day, Ewa Yekomi. Shout out to you, you know. And I was there and I was really writing every single thing Okam told me. Was like, do this by this. BYM Mayfield, they give this, like, there's a GRE school, like, prep school I also attended. They give this discount. If you pay now, you get this. I wrote down every single information like it was do or die, life or death. And then I started to work on it because I knew, okay, this was serious. I paid for my GRE schooling. You know, see, this story is so long, I don't think we can complete it in an episode. But anyway, I still plan to, you know, give you more context as the time goes by. But the most important gist of today is I got into Cornell. I'll probably look for the email and post a screenshot on Instagram. But even if I don't, like, well, the whole story is here waiting for anybody who needs to hear it. So yeah, I signed up for my GRE classes. Eventually, I started on my Friday CDS days, you know, when we closed by 2, I would go to the Ikoyi library to try to read. On Saturdays, I would go to class at Ikeja, you know. Nigerians might understand most of these places I'm talking to, but like, it was like traveling cross country, you know. No offense to my mainland friends, please. But I would leave like in the morning. And, you know, when if I was still, when my parents still had drivers and all that, the drivers would have gone to drop me in Kenya and all those nonsense. But eventually, as time would have it, I had to learn the ropes. I had to start entering the bus. And it was such an activity for me. And being the woman I am also, I always pack snacks wherever I'm going. So it's just a thing I think I learned from my mom. You know, you would see me, something to other human beings. Normal human beings only carry textbook and biro and pen. But me, I didn't have a car. I'll still be carrying. Sometimes I wouldn't carry a change of slippers. In case anywhere it gets rainy or muddy, I'll carry umbrella. I'll carry my biscuits and my drink. And what else do I carry? Sometimes I'll buy chips or and then eventually I found out that there was a kiosk in front of the school where I could get my snacks and my nibbles from. So, but you know, I would go ready like I was going for war. It was a whole day's class. I think class started by 10 or 12. I don't even remember all these details, you know, till evening. And then I'll start the journey back to Lekki. And when I mean journey was because you keep changing buses, you know. I'm saying changing because that's the proper thing to say. But if we're in Nigeria, I'll say we'll keep jumping buses because like you jump, like you come down, jump one, jump to Obalende, jump to all those other places I don't even remember right now. I think I'll stop at Ale, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then eventually I'll make it up to you join the Lekki Ajah bus at CMS. Then yes, then I would stop at Agungi. Oh my goodness. Bad old days actually. And then, so I did that for like, over how many months? I think 3 to 6 months, you know? And then my GRE score came out. I'm not even so still proud to say my GRE score, but I'll say it anyway, because that's the whole point. If I don't say it, how else will someone be inspired to know that it's not my GRE score? I had 303 for my first score. Please, I'm whispering it. Please, don't go and air my dirty laundry. In short, it can't even be dirty again. I'm the one in Cornell now, so if you like, air the laundry, it's your business. Yeah. So... I'm not fighting with you. I'm sorry. But the whole point is that, yeah. So I had a 303 in my cherry. Which, of course, like, just tell any random man on the street that, oh, I'm trying to get into a US school with 303. They're going to laugh you to your death, you know. So, and then my TOEFL, in short, it was plainly written in all the requirements. For your TOEFL, you had to have, like, above 100. I had 98. Yeah, I think it was 98 I had. 27 in writing, 23 in speaking, 24 in reading, and what's the last one? And I think I had 24 in listening as well. Or, you know, whatever, whether 23 in listening, whatever. So, it was, I think that adds up to about 98, which was still less. I remember when I was applying to Stanford, I wrote that I want to confirm that their law of their requirement of 98 is the original requirement, you know, something like that. See, no, that I think I have to do an episode of that. Never to underestimate the power of emails. Like emails, they're like your best friends when applying to schools in other countries. Like you, all your answers, you don't even need them from me. Once you shoot an email, they always respond. I always target it. Like 9 a.m. here is like 2 p.m. Nigeria or thereabouts. Give or take 2-3. So I would always target to email them at their lunch time here. Maybe like 12. So, or whether maybe they come back from lunch, they meet the email, or very early in the morning. So know your time zones. There's the PT, Pacific time, Central time, Eastern time, you know, Mountain time zone. There are so many time zones here. But I knew the time zones of each country or each state I was applying to. And I would always target to send them emails at very high peak times. 9 a.m., 12 noon, 2 p.m. and maybe hardly 5 p.m. So, you know, like that. So I sent an email and they told me, yes, it's a very strict, but however, we do offer TOEFL waivers. Even Stanford gave me a TOEFL waiver. So that's why I was really harboring so many dreams, you know, that I was really building so many castles in the air that I would get into Stanford. But eventually, so those were, that's my, you know, those were what I had, you know. Although I would say I had a strong SOP with just a very little typo error actually. I reread my SOP after I submitted and I found out that, and I think I mentioned that I submitted really late. I found out that instead of saying as much as I can, I said as much as I can. I missed out an as. And once you find things like that, you already tell yourself you're definitely not getting it. Like every SOP warning talks about how you should reread your essay and type proof it and everything, but no. Tolu couldn't just do that, you know? See, I can tell you 1 million stories about my journey to getting here today and how I was not the typical student that was supposed to get into Cornell. But like I said, I don't want to tell you all the things that, oh, I don't want to list out all my, you know, pedigrees or all my, you know, all the possible qualifications and things that I did it by my own will or power. No. That would be such a huge lie. No. I eventually took my GRE exam the second time. So my first GRE, I still remember all my dates. I took my TOEFL September 7th, 2020. 2019, I think. I took my GRE 11th September 2019. I retook the exam 25th November 2019. I even paid for a tutor, extra 60,000 naira. Although I didn't have to go to Ikeja every time, but I started going to this reading cafe, I think Nulis and Cafe One at Lennox Mall, you know, on the Lekki Phase One Admiralty Road, you know. I would meet my tutor there. So I put in so much sweat that even if the devil thought it was punishing me, he would have said, no, this girl self has tried, you know. Like, I put in everything. And I didn't even know why I thought what I was fighting for, honestly. Now, when I think back, I'm like, did I really want to do my master's that bad, you know? It's just, you know, no one, I think, it's yes, no one likes failure. Failure is like they say, the bastard. It's nobody wants to be associated with it, you know? So, I really fought hard. And this is where I'm supposed to tell you, oh, yes, I now had a 320 or a 325. Nope. I had 301 over 340 still. That's like the biggest joke. But yeah, I had 301. And you know what, you guys, this podcast will probably be the longest podcast I will ever record. But I'm just looking at the time. But you guys, bear with me. We'll make it to the end of the story soon. So, it's almost an hour now or not. But yeah, so when I saw the score after the exam, you guys all know GRE exams are like 4 hours. I don't even remember if there are breaks or not, but 4 hours. I don't even, if I really say the story, people who as parents come to ESMA don't want to come again. And I don't want you to think it's such a hard process that, oh, I can't do it. It's a lie. You can actually. Although you really have to have some extra kind of gut, grit, grind, you know, to like decide that, oh, I'm going to do this. But I don't want you to say, oh, because the process looks, you know, wondrous, that's why you're going to walk away from it. Because it can actually take a toll on you. I was off social media for 1 year. Like my whole life changed just because I was preparing to come to the US. I would say I lost 1 year of my life, but I'm gaining it back, you know. So, what was I saying? So yes, I got 301. I still remember after I thought I flunked the first GRE, you know, and I was looking for so many ways. I was like, what do I do? You know, I would talk to people. They would say, ah, no, you need like a 310, like a 310 to enter, you know, university. People would ask me, what schools are you applying to? And I won't be bold to tell them because I didn't want anyone to now say, then what did you score in GRE? And try to now laugh me to my death. What am I like? How do you apply to Cornell with a 310? What are you thinking, sister? You know, or what are you thinking? You know, I didn't want people to now, you know, downplay my effort, because if I was to get into a school by my efforts, I should have gotten in because I put in so much work. It's just unfortunate that efforts don't always yield results. You know, I was always the one who always thought that if you definitely work hard, you will reap, you know, like you would reap the benefits of it. But that whole experience, if I keep referencing God, I'm so sorry if you're not a Christian, but please just bear with me because this is real. I cannot help to explain my story without mentioning this, you know, like what Americans here call the force or the universe or the manifest, you know, whatever, yada yada yada, all that is. But yeah, God is such a huge part of this story. And so eventually, after getting 303, I was like, maybe if I rewrite it, I didn't want to aim too much for 320 again, which was what I was aiming for. Maybe I'll get a 310. So and you know, trust me, if you're applying to US schools, you know that we're always subscribed to one newsletter here, one newsletter there. And you know, Indians are the ones who give us all the gist on YouTube about how to go about these things. So I was subscribed to this top B school something consultancy where they would talk to you and walk you through the process, teach you how to, you know, write an SOP, you know, prepare your CV for US admissions, blah blah blah. So I send them an email, a message that, oh, I would like a free consultation. I think there was even the advert going on a free consultation. So I registered for one, and I remember taking the call at the office that day, you know, I was still very sad, and I don't know if I was depressed, but I remember those days being very long. Even if the sun was shining, it felt like it was raining, you know, just because I did not get the score I wanted. And then they told me, oh, I should retake the test. I should retake the test. And at first, because retaking the test was not even an option, because how was I going to tell my parents? Of course, then, even if I was working, I was saving so hard that I couldn't afford to. I didn't just want to pay for the exam, but if they had to make me pay, then maybe I would have paid. The exam was like $200 and something, if I remember correctly. And then they told me to retake the exam. Even my mom had told me, but 303 is okay. You know, my parents were so cute. Like, they thought that the score was so high, over 340, that at least you didn't get 100 and something. I'm like, look at these people. They don't even understand what I'm saying. When people who... Don't worry, let me not laugh too much, please. Because people who actually get the good scores know what I'm saying. So, well, I eventually rewrote the exam. And I remember saying, God, should I rewrite the exam? Show me a sign. Should I rewrite it or not? Please don't let me waste money. And I was getting no answers. But I was like, you know, when you just tell yourself that it's a lie, God has said yes, I'm going with this plan. And I went, I wasted money, I rewrote another exam, and I still got 301. That day, I'm not somebody that panics easily or, you know, cries. Like, even if someone dies now or I see an accident, it will hit me. But, and for someone who wears her emotions on her sleeves, right, those kind of things are the things you should cry for. But I would rather cry for rather mundane things, you know. So, I didn't even, my head was still spinning that 301. No, maybe it's 310. I'm saying 30. Hey, my brain was on fire. That you mean after all this smoke that left my head in this exam, I stay at 301. I didn't even send that score to any school. That's how funny it was. I think I ended up sending it to Purdue because, you know, your first exam, you only send to 4 schools. I sent Cornell, Columbia, Stanford, and one other, George Washington. So this time I was applying to Purdue, so I had to send that one. I just said, let me dash Purdue that score. I couldn't even send it to Cornell because it wasn't still a good school, which is the joke of all of this. And I was just like, God, what is happening here? I can't obviously write a third exam. No, you have to be kidding me. I'm just going to apply like that. At a point, I was even already reaching giving up stage. Do you get? But I was like, I'm still going to apply anyway because that's who I am. You know, I just still believed that a miracle would happen. I just felt like I'd put in so much work that even if it wasn't showing, somewhere, somehow, the stars would align and know that, no, she has done her part. And, you know, put in the work. But eventually I definitely did not rewrite my TOEFL. I say all of this to say this, that I didn't stop. I didn't give up. I won't say I necessarily believed in myself, but I just believed in the hard work I had sown on some soil, you know, that it would still germinate good fruit. And I submitted my applications, although I would say my SOP was quite solid. I really put in, it's original. I didn't, even if I read a couple of other people's essays, but you never see like I lifted any word or anything because mine was really original. I really digged, my English tonight. I really dug deep into myself and I was like, what do I really want from this master's? What do I really want from, why am I really, you know, going to study this education? Which is what all this SOP wants, you know, which is what the graduate admissions community wants to see in an SOP, right? You know, I really dug deep and I was like, what do I really want out of this master's? And I wrote my SOP. Of course, I wrote my CV. Like I said, by the natural look of things, if you see my CV, if you see my LinkedIn, you'll be like, oh, this girl has done well for herself, even at age 25, you know, assume 25 or whatever. Well, at least it looks like that, which is what your CV should look like. So yeah, I would say every other thing worked well. But if we're all being serious and fair, we all know that getting into this school is all about your GRE. But I didn't have my GRE. But here am I, sitting in my bed, my queen-size bed, at Cornell University. Look at me now. I still remember when I got here to campus, I sent an email to my program director that, look at me sending you an email from Ithaca, New York, you know, exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark, smiley, smiley, smiley. Because I still couldn't believe it that I was here. Anytime I think about it, it brings a lot of emotions, you know. And then eventually I got into Cornell. I sent them an email. I also told them, I'm not sure. George Washington offer. I also got admission to George Washington. Like I said, I think March 2nd. I think even Stanford application decision came in March 1st or March 10th. I'm not sure if I'm mixing up the date, but I also got into George Washington and they offered me 50% off. So for the four semesters I'll be there, I was going to get 25% off each semester tuition. So by the time you add all that together for the bulk tuition fee, I was going to get 50% off, which was a very good deal, right? Because my parents could afford the rest, at least, or could try to afford the rest. So I was like, should I take this one? But then everybody my parents now told I got into Cornell were like, Cornell, wow, it's Ivy League. So everybody's mind was now on Cornell, even though none of us really knew what this school was before, you know. So I now said, you know what, and obviously still, trust me, if you're applying to all these schools, you know, you know the whole drill now. How YouTube videos are our new Bibles, admission Bibles. We sleep there, we roast there, you know, like we read everything back and watch everything back to back. I stumbled on some Ijeoma Kola videos on how she negotiated her admission in some schools. So she's someone who went to Harvard for her undergrad, Columbia for her master's and PhD, and she also talked about how when she got into some other schools and she got into Harvard, she wrote back to Harvard or so saying, I got admission into this school, but I really like to come to Harvard, but I can't make it. Would you be please give me an offer? And that's how, I think, if I'm not mixing the story up, that's how Harvard gave her funding to go there, you know, as an undergrad. So I was like, I'm going to do this. And I watched this video a long time ago, but the information was still somewhere in my head, because I felt like, wow, you can negotiate your offer. So I wrote to Cornell, I wrote to my program director that I just got admission. Because all along, after my admission, already, when I saw the school fees was $83,200, I didn't even convert, because my calculator might have broken in trying to convert that amount. So I just went, I even just carried myself to my parents and said, Daddy and Mommy, you see the price. Maybe they could have been able to afford half of it. Or, you know, I feel like if push came to shove, we'll still have found a way. God still have made a way for us to. But it was almost impossible. In fact, I was almost going to defer my admission because we couldn't afford the fees. So I was like, no. God, did you really bring me this far not to help me? And at that time, we all know Aramide, how she got into Harvard, you know, even based on benevolence of people on social media streets. But, you know, you cannot just, there's sometimes you just know some things are not for you. I was like, oh, am I supposed to go? God, are you telling me to go and start a GoFundMe page like Aramide did, you know? So, but everybody's journey is not the same. Everybody's path is not the same. And that's something that I've always known. I'm serious. Like, that face your front is a very serious philosophy in my life. Like, I do not belong to any statistics. I'm not, even if they say there's only 11% rate, I'm sorry, I do not belong to your statistics. I'm coming from where God says, if he says yes, nobody can say no. So how do I belong to your statistics? I'm sorry, where does that add up, you know? So I don't really believe that. I always believe my case is different. I've always believed that there's an exception to every rule, and that exception is me. So I told you I could be very superior in thinking about myself, which is, well, it has helped me more than it hasn't helped me. So I still stick to that philosophy in life. So yeah, so you know, I just wrote an email to my program director that I really like to come to Cornell. Are there any funding packages or offers? She had already told me no as at March 1st. Hey, I said, now, wow, maybe I should just ask. And George Washington already giving me an ultimatum when I should reply to them to accept this admission. So time was running out. Time was of the essence. And I needed to do all of these things before April 1st. So I sent an email again. So now this is the email I'm talking about. I sent an email that, please, I would like to confirm if I got admission into GW, and I also want to go there, but of course this is Cornell, I shouldn't say no to you. And honestly, I'm not someone to like to give hogwash or like to try to massage your ego, or I wasn't trying to massage anybody's ego. I was just really being honest, and I really wear my emotions on my sleeve sometimes, maybe a little bit too much. You know, I really told her in email. It was a professional email, yet cordial. I was like, I really would still like to come to Cornell because of the acclaim of the school and all of that. And of course, who would want to turn down a, you know, an admission at Cornell, blah, blah, blah. I wish I could pull up all these emails, you know, and I really said it from my heart. And I would really like to, I have so amount of days to respond to GW, but I just wanted to ask again if it was possible that you could find me a funding offer. I think this was the third time I was asking her, and she kept saying, I'll see what I can do, but at this time it's not possible, blah blah blah. And I sent it in faith. March 31st, she sent, I received an email from the director of my program saying that Congratulations. I love when I see my name and there, my family's house, at permanent house address, you know. And congratulations, Yetolo. You have been selected to, I mean, you have been awarded this offer from the Engineering Management Department of Cornell University, where you have been given a partial tuition fellowship of $35,000. Immediately, you know me, I'm always very calm with all these stories. I don't need to shout too much when I, cause me to have like, I'm someone that reads to the end. Even all these stupid policies of, I accept, and you know, all those things that they make us sign online. Most times, if it's like 7 pages long, I can read it. But if it's not, at least I can skim through it. So, you know, so I would always read it to the end. That's my whole point. So I don't need to shout first. I would want to read it to the end in case there's any conditional offer. And I finished reading and I went to go and show my mom. You know, I think at that time we had started working at home. So people in my house were at different places with their laptops. I think my mom was in the dining table. My dad was somewhere in Palo. And me, I was also in Palo working. I think that's where the Wi-Fi router was. So I just took my laptop and I went to go and show my mom first. Because I knew, of course, her happiness would be more. And that's how the woman stood up from her chair and was dancing. Oh, come and see what the Lord has done for me. Hey. Either that or come and join me sing hallelujah, one of those songs. I still remember the woman. She was shouting and dancing that, oh my God, God is so, of course God is good and God is faithful. I know that until today, I'm still so grateful for it. But I think I still couldn't believe it that you mean that email worked. You mean that? And I did, it's not, I won't tell you that I was praying and fasting, but I was, you know, there's sometimes this whole journey, I was just like, God, let me see what you do. It's like I was daring him. Let me see if you actually throw me under the bus this time. After trusting you so much with my life. How dare, you know? But yes, he didn't throw me under the bus. And they sent me my offer. And I even got an extra 1.5 stipend, you know, that so I had to TA for classes. But just for like 7 hours a week, which is totally a breeze. So it's almost still like free money. So with that huge body, that's almost like 50% taking off, right? From it's 3K to like, that's about 47K now. So which now became like UK school fees, you know, which my parents were able to afford. Thank God. In fact, even that amount still looked impossible. But eventually, God came through. I remember still praying that God, please, you know, make a way. Even if I'm ready to defer, but just promise me that even if I defer, you would make a way. But eventually, I didn't have to defer and God provided the money. And that's how I was able to resume at Cornell. So I think I should stop this right now. But yes. So that's the story of how I got into Cornell, you know, undeserving. But yet I made it. And that's why I'm trying so hard to make the best of it. That's why in subsequent episode, I will also talk about how to maximize your experiences in different ways. That's why when I go to class, like, I'm sorry, you can't even make me feel like black. Even my mom is always saying that anytime I like give any random, she should be like, is it because you're black? I said, see, I'm Nigerian before I'm black. Oh, me, I don't understand this black. Or even Auntie Chimamanda mother talks about how, you know, it was until she came to America, she realized she was black, you know. And that's the same way I feel. But to me, I'm sorry, I'm not even... I'm Nigerian before I'm black. Like, don't even, to me, I feel like you can't make me feel less. I don't know how to explain it. Of course, that also probably stems from the superiority complex I feel about myself, but, you know, like, intrinsically, like, internally, like, I feel so good about myself on most days that you can't make me feel anyhow. So, that's why that's even another thing I think about sometimes about my admissions, you know, like what if it's even because I'm black I got in, you know, what if I meet, you know, now how schools are being very diverse and inclusive. So there's always this spot left for some black person or some, you know, some minority, you know, and even as a woman, you're already, the cards are already, you know, in your favor. They're not even stacked up against you anymore. Even I remember my Stanford application, I played the cards of as a black female in Nigeria. You know, I would put it everywhere, black. Although, look at me now trying to claim black. But, you know, that's the English they understand, you know. So that's why I would still keep telling people who I've always spoken to since I got. So 2 years since after I've gotten this admission, I've also, you know, been able to mentor other people and talk to other people who are interested in coming to the US. Like, don't ever be afraid to reach, like, for whatever school you want. You don't have to be reaching for Ivy League, but for whatever school it is that your heart so desires to be in, please reach for it, because you might just be the person they're looking for in that year. Even if they don't accept you because your GPA was the best, I didn't even finish university in Nigeria with the first class. I finished the 4.4 and first class stuff and 4.5. But if you didn't even check the trajectory of my grades, actually, because I hear that's a thing too that they do. How did you do well? How well did you do in your junior and senior years, which we will call 400 and 500 level for engineering students and 300 and 400 level students for other students, you know, who are not studying 5-year courses in Nigerian universities. You know, they will check the trajectory of your grades. And actually, from my second year university, I started doing better. Although I had a sharp drop in my third year when I took up on too many roles, but you would see that my fourth and fifth year, I had some of my best GPAs. So you never know when statistics change and then they suddenly become in your favor. So apparently when I was admitted, I was the only new admitted black student. I'm not even kidding you, honestly. But I met three other black people in my class. So shout out to Chloe, Barbara, and Mok. You probably see them somewhere on the IG page, you know. So we're four black in our cohort, but I was the only newly admitted people. Those who were undergrad students who decided to do their masters with Cornell. So what if I was just the black lady they were looking for and I did not know? And I stayed there. I was like, oh, no, I'm not applying to Cornell. The application fee for Cornell was $105, but I applied for an application fee waiver and I got it. So, the ceiling is not your limit. The sky is not even your limit. How do you even say it now? The sky is your starting point. Like, space might as well be your starting point because, like, there's so much room. There's so much room to surprise yourself, honestly. So, that's my story of how I got into Cornell. I hope I'm not missing out anything. But yeah, I think that's the whole journey from starting from 2018 up until now. It was a really long ride, but I'm happy I made it. I'm also really thankful to my family, my parents, especially, you know, for the privilege it is, you know, for them to have been able to afford my fees, afford my rent, afford my, you know, every single thing that they give me here that I'm not working for yet. And I hope to pay it forward someday. I'm also really grateful to my sisters who gave me, and my friends who were there as good support systems, you know, who gave me the breathing space I also needed and the advice and just the mental support I needed to be able to carry through the tough year that 2019 was. So by the time I got my admission, it was like all my pain into the gutter. Like, I couldn't even remember what it was like anymore to suffer through, you know, all that pain and rigor and, you know, hard work that I'd put in. It was such a bliss. Even though the pandemic hit, you know, how I really thought I was going to go to school in 6 months, the pandemic hit again, but I was that determined and I made it to the US still in November. So you probably see all those extra gist in the captions on the IG page of the non-immigrant students. And look at me, I'm here today at Cornell, living my best life. I'm literally living my best life. I'm not doing anything against my books, you know, but I'm just happy to be free, to be happy, and, you know, to just be an adult, you know, because also in Nigerian homes, you know how your parents do not like to see us grow. They just always still want to see you as children, you know, but here now, and it's like they respect me more from over there. Like, they really see on Twitter, it's true. The best kind of relationship to be with your parents are the long distance relationship. It really works well. But yeah, I'm grateful for them. And I'm still forever grateful to God Almighty, Jesus Christ and Holy Spirit for bringing me this far, for giving me the grace to also believe in myself, you know, to be able to follow. I always believe that my steps are ordered by the Lord because I am a child of God, you know. It's not like I'm always praying. I'm always trying to hear the heartbeat of God concerning every area of my life. But I trust, like I say, I trust that every decision I make is backed up somewhere. I'm not making it on my own, you know. And I just trust the process. I trust my journey. And I just trust. Although sometimes for those of you who are burdened with your ambition, your purpose, you know, every time you wake up, it's like, I have something to do. Sometimes I wish I was a woman without ambition. It would make my life easier, you know. I would just live knowing that I'm not indebted to anybody. But when you wake up every morning with a vision, with a purpose, you know, oh, I have to do something. I have to do this. I have to do this. It makes your life more meaningful. And I hope that you're able to do that. So for as many of you who are aspiring to study abroad, hope to come here someday to study. And like I've also mentioned how I really knew why I wanted to come. I wasn't exactly running away from the country. I really knew it was the next step to take, even though it looked like I might get a job, I might not get a job, but it felt like the next best thing to do. And for you, if you're at that point in your life where it feels like it's the next best thing to do, even if it means, you know, running away in air quotes from your country, take the step anyway and come. And honestly, like, what's the worst that can happen? What's the worst? And sometimes don't even think of the worst. I can't tell you that I thought a particular school was going to reject me. Heck, I even thought Stanford was going to take me. So even though there were days I would just be on my bed thinking, this Stanford people, they're going to reject me. I know it. It's all good. What's the next school? I would always have those thoughts. Then I'll be like, no, get your head in the game. They're not going to reject you. You did your best. You put in your best. And that's how I also operate too. Like, I put in my best so that even when they didn't take me, I don't feel like, maybe I did something wrong. No. I put in my best. And if my best wasn't best enough to get me in, then I shouldn't have been there. So that's the same mindset too I used to approach all this. And when I was applying to Cornell, I put in at least 120%, at least. I still remember sitting down that night. And when I tell you that I submit like a T to the deadline, it's not because I was late or I procrastinated not to do it. It's because I was trying to perfect each step. So the step of my SOP, every day I would take a look at it. Rewrite, redo, rewrite, you know. Every day of my CV, I'll take a look at it. Rewrite, redo. All these things will be ready in place, but every day I'm checking it. Is it perfect yet? Who can I send it to? You know, so I was doing everything to the T. I sat down, I have a friend who is applying to Cornell. She was trying to look for something there that she couldn't find some requirements, blah, blah, blah. I went in there and I looked for it. Why? Because now me and that website, we go way back. When I'm applying to each school, I have visited every single tab, hyperlink, every single place I should have clicked on. I clicked on it. So like, you can't... No information should have passed me by. If not, it's my fault. And I think that's how they operate here. They expect you to be able to find everything by yourself. So I had no other choice than to be able to do my due diligence. So I remember on my Cornell application, they told us a list of things they would like to see in my SOP. I sat down with my SOP and I sat down without, I think I even, and I always print. There was a printer at home. I just put them side by side and I put it. Okay, this is what they want. This, I have it in one paragraph. This is what they want. And I kept cross-checking it. I wanted to be sure that I had given them more than 100%. So that even if I don't get it, at least even if it's my excuse, I'll be like, God, you know how we tell ourselves there's a reason for everything. I would believe in that excuse because truly I put in my best. I put in my best. And if it didn't work, then trust them. Possibly I wasn't supposed to go there. So you can also try that approach to, you know, to decisions in your life. And I hope it works for you. So I think I'm going to put an end to this episode right here. I have spoken so much. I think we're over an hour, but I guess that's allowed because this is a special episode. It's a very special episode. So, but henceforth, every other tips and tricks episode will probably keep it still to 30 minutes. So please let me know of anything you'd like to hear. If there's any particular thing you think about each day as a non-immigrant student you'd like me to know, please shoot me an email at thenonimmigrantstudent.com. thenonimmigrantstudent@gmail.com. Yes, I would respond, you know, and get to you and put out more content that hopefully would be beneficial to both of us. So thank you very much. Please make sure you listen, like, review, rate, subscribe, every single thing you know that you would do that would make this podcast get there to others. Honestly, I feel every day I just wish I could just dump all the information on the internet without caring about what anybody thinks. But some of my friends have been messaging me that, oh, you have to do this like this. Oh, there are algorithms to this and to that. I'm like, this is so much work. Because I really don't know where this is going yet, but I'm still trying to do it right. So please just help me leave a review, honest reviews, please, so that I can implement as well. So just let me know, you know, and I hope you enjoyed this story and I hope this inspires you to go live your dreams. Thank you so much and see you in the next episode of The Non-Immigrant Student. Bye.